Welcome to the What Matters Today podcast from the Graduate Institute. I'm Dan Graham, Head of Communications at the Graduate Institute. In this podcast series, we ask members of our faculty to comment on key global issues. The Arab Spring protests started in December 2010. In this episode, we examine the impact and legacy of the Arab Spring 10 years on. My guest is Mohamed Mahmoud Mohamedou, Professor of International History and Chair of the International History Department at the Graduate Institute. In an interview with Reuters, Jordan's former foreign minister, Marwan Muasher, said that a decade after the Arab Spring, there is still little good governance in the Arab world. What is this good governance he is speaking of? And do you think there was indeed progress made in this direction?
The phrase good governance is certainly itself associated with a certain global worldview, usually related to foreign aid and donors. And so it is kind of specific in that context. But if governance itself, governance that would be made or looked upon as legitimate, fair, accountable, if that is the notion, certainly that is something that is central to the whole Arab Spring issue, because it speaks to the relationship between the ruler, and we're really talking about the individual here. There's so much in the story about power centralized around a person, the presidents, these presidents for life, and the notion of rulership around them in Arabic, dawla, qiyada, sulta, hukm, governance, centrality of all of those notions is so pregnant. So has progress been made? I would say yes, if progress is defined as a departure from the previous status quo in which that type of governance was unquestioned. It was essentially in control of a society and behaving very much in an unchecked and conceivably uncheckable way in that sense. But I would say the issue is really very much about this notion, not so much of governance only in that way, but also of something I would add, which is the notion of social contract. Because governance ultimately is derivative of that. It's derivative of the expectations that would flow out of a social contract. And so the good or bad assessments, I think, are the wrong ones in that sense. The Arab Spring is a step forward if only because the governance of these rulers, their authoritarianism, has been taken to task by these protesters. And there has been a notion of pushing back. But it is, by the way, no surprise that this whole story started in Tunisia and Egypt, which were the eminently authoritarian states in the region.
Some experts say that without solid governance in some areas, that the clock has started ticking on authoritarianism. And as we know, history has a tendency to repeat itself. How exposed are some of these countries to a return to authoritarian rule?
Well, definitely authoritarianism has not gone. The battle, however, has been joined. And it has been since 2010. It has now been 10 years in which this whole issue of authoritarianism is being essentially the centerpiece of what we're looking at. It's important because what authoritarianism does also, it functions in this region and beyond as something that is very much convinced of its force, of its ideology. And so it has been pushing back. And it has been pushing back, particularly if the scene after the Arab Spring, the transitions, the political transitions, become ones of economies of despair, of need. And so, yes, you could look at the scene and see that in Egypt, for instance, someone as Sisi is just as bad, if not worse, actually, than Mubarak. And Mohamed Morsi, the one-year president under that transition, was himself not immune from authoritarian tendencies. Beyond Assad in Syria has survived. And of course, the UAE and Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states were hardly threatened in that sense. But I would say to understand that sequence, again, as we sort of dig into the complexities of the Arab Spring transition, authoritarianism is not easy to dismount. It is a very sophisticated, a very powerful, a resilient system. So you're not looking at simply a moment in which the revolution is going to produce the magical disappearance overnight, or even over 1 or 2 or 3 years of authoritarian systems that had been in place since the 1960s when these new nations, quote unquote, were born. So that's one particularly important element in the notion of authoritarianism. The battle has been joined. There is a process. These structures are on their way to be dismantled, but they have pushed back and have found kind of a new life in many places. The other aspect of the story is that authoritarianism is also not linear, but cyclical. So as we conceive of the Arab Spring as a new phase in the history of these countries, we also have to see that authoritarianism, as it manifests itself in other regions, is also a phenomenon that can look like it's gone, but can come back. See how in Latin America, after the successful transitions of the 70s and 80s, it has made a comeback, and see how it's sort of even rearing its head in Europe and in North America, for that matter. So for the Arab Spring transitions, authoritarianism remains a fundamental sort of challenge that has to be dealt with in the long term, as it were.
Much of what has been written about the 10-year anniversary of the Arab Spring underlines unfulfilled promises and disappointment. Was the Arab Spring a failure?
So the disenchantment is absolutely there, and it's normal. It's what usually comes after revolutions. There's hardly any revolution in history that has, again, magically produced a sort of a happy ever after situation, for that matter. But I think we're stuck in the analysis of the Arab Spring with this notion of failure. Failure is a notion that we really need to move beyond. It's a concept that betrays a certain impatience with political transitions. It carries, obviously, in this case, a narrative of Orientalism, of even of racism, in the sense that it speaks about the ability of these populations to produce democracy, for that matter. I think it also establishes this loaded approach, which is as if a double standard was being presented to the region that is subject to. I think that uprisings, revolutions, as I said, whether in Western Europe, as we've seen them in the past, or Eastern Europe in the 90s, or Latin America that I mentioned in the 70s, can hardly be assessed 10 years later in such terms. If you do that, by the way, you would see that 10 years after the Civil War in the United States, where slavery was abolished, you had the Jim Crow laws. 10 years after the French revolutions, you had Napoleon overthrowing the Republic. 10 years after the Russian Revolution, you had Stalin taking over. So obviously it is the wrong frame. I think that if we're looking at successes, what I would say, it rests in this notion of having changed the terms of engagement with that authoritarian state we were discussing a moment ago. The notion of fear has moved to these regimes that all of a sudden feel like that they have to justify, that they have to push back, that they have to find new ways to exist, as it were. And so you have that pressure, which was absent from the Arab polity for decades on. In that sense, one could certainly use this whole notion of a success. But I would say, and I think this is what I would like to invite as a way to think through this, is that we have thought too much of the Arab Spring in terms of current affairs. And I think we have to think of it in historical terms. It is not so much sort of a current affairs development in that sense to be assessed 6 months in, 3 years in, 10 years in, but as a historical kind of marker of how these societies and these nations and that region is evolving.
Did the Gulf states take advantage of the civil unrest during the Arab Spring to expand their influence? If so, how?
Well, absolutely, they did. I mean, they won in the short and the medium term, as I would say. Of course, it's a bit of victory. But if you look at it sort of pragmatically, cynically, you would see that they have acted quickly to buy off the happiness of their citizenry. Within 2 or 3 months, Saudi Arabia had introduced a special fund of some $230 billion, if I recall, essentially to sort of work on the sort of pushing back against the possibility of such movements. They denied that this was an issue, of course. And indirectly, the message, or even directly, actually, vividly, well, the message was sent through the taking down of the revolution in Bahrain, which is often forgotten as one of the key stories in that whole episode. They instrumentalized the situations in Egypt, Yemen, Libya, even Syria to reposition themselves. And soon enough, actually, the narrative worked because they were sort of presented as the exception, which the more the West was threatened by the whole ISIS saga and story, the more someone like Assad could peddle that narrative. And therefore, as the Gulf was itself presenting its own authoritarianism, was able to move away from that. But as I said, it's kind of a Pyrrhic victory because ultimately what you're seeing is that these systems, the citizenry in these countries has also witnessed the transformation in the cultural milieu around them. They've seen this new culture emerging in Egypt, in Lebanon, in Tunisia, certainly across North Africa and all over. And so there's a sense of dissonance as this young generation, which is very connected globally, sees its wealth allowing it to live through all of these possibilities, but politically, domestically, at home, we're still at the level of fighting for driver's licenses. So that's essentially why I think that the whole globalization aspect, the UAE is another example. Dubai is very much an Orwellian kind of authoritarian system in that sense, although the leisure that comes with that sort of transcends the political issues as it were. The Gulf states, I would say, definitely were able to circumvent that. But I think that in the longer term, the question might come back even more forcefully than they might expect.
Roughly 60% of the Arab world's population is under the age of 30. How has this younger generation picked up the torch 10 years after the Arab Spring uprisings? Where do their hopes lie for their future?
Well, youth is absolutely the crux of the matter in this story. It was a revolution that was sort of initiated and moved and successfully landed, at least as the departure of the rulers goes, at the hands of these actors. We tend to sort of oversimplify that sometimes in the narrative because these youth were not by themselves. These young girls were marching shoulder and shoulder with their mothers, their grandmothers. This was an uprising which was on a societal level. However, it was the story and the history of a generation for sure. And so now I think you're right in highlighting this as a big challenge. We've seen in January 2021 how in the success story that Tunisia has been, quote unquote, even there is now uprisings primarily because of the economic condition. And until this population, this youth population across the region has the possibility of seeing real prospects, not merely jobs, but a sort of a future prospect, sort of integration in a society, livelihoods that are secured, possibilities of building a life sort of plan, as it were, until that whole normality is established over one or two cycles, then we will not be able to speak in terms of successes for that matter. I think the demographic bulge for sure has been a challenge for that region and others, sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, parts of Asia for quite a while. But I think in this political story, there is that despair that moved the events in 2010, which has nonetheless remained. And I think this certainly remains an issue. I should say, however, that as I was just mentioning in relation to the Gulf, other sectors were improved within that population. The role of women, particularly, we've seen Arab women being extremely sort of central to the story. They played a leadership role across these societies in the Sudan, in Egypt, in Lebanon, in Tunisia, in Morocco, in Algeria. We've seen quite a lot of this in Yemen. The national discussion in Yemen in 2012 before the civil war was really led by a lot of civil society movements by women. And so we've seen them at the level of universities, of the diaspora actually being engaged. And I think those elements are also equally elements to be valued. And I would say the gaze on the youth itself on the part of the society has changed. It's looked upon, it became looked upon as an actor that the state had to engage with, that had to listen to in ways that were absent in the previous authoritarian sequence.
And finally, what is the legacy of the Arab Spring?
We can look at it at different levels. And I do think that overall it's a positive legacy. Again, a work in progress for sure, but overall a constructive, positive legacy, which I would say probably worked at different levels. On a domestic level, you would speak of something like the Arab Spring was the introduction of a new cognitive outlook on Arab society. All of a sudden, this generation opened a vista which was absent, a way to conceive of politics in open ways, in ways that placed accountability and justice at the center, which other movements historically in the region had certainly worked for, in terms of constitutionalism, in terms of civil society. But all of a sudden, you had this new cognitive outlook, which was quite vividly introduced and within a matter of weeks or days sometimes. At the global level, and the Arab Spring is a global event historically, I think we see the legacy of the Arab Spring as the forceful advancement of a modern type of social struggle. And we see the momentum that it has given in inspiring a large number of movements around the world that had nothing to do with the Arab Spring in different places, in Europe, in the United States, in Asia, in Africa. But all of a sudden started kind of speaking this stylistic kind of tone of protest, which the Arab Spring demoed in 2010. And in between, at the regional level, I think across the Middle East and North Africa, I think that the Arab Spring was also the substantiation of the ethics of democracy, which had long been absent in the region. You had had democracy being sort of tarnished or sort of looked upon suspiciously, if not canceled, by these governments. Now, all of a sudden, the ethics, the very ethos of democracy as a system of justice, of equality, of fairness, of representation, of human rights, was elevated to a national debate. And I think in many ways, we see the Arab Spring as having sort of forcefully and probably lastingly marked a rupture in the culture of these societies in that sense. Now, how to sort of turn that into a lasting, resilient, staying the course kind of process, I think that's the stuff of political transitions, and that's the stuff of a generation at least.
Great. Thank you for that, and thank you for participating in this episode.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Professor Mohamed Mahmoud Mohamadou discussing the impact and legacy of the Arab Spring 10 years on. This podcast series is produced by the Graduate Institute Communications team. For more information about the Graduate Institute, please visit our website at graduateinstitute.ch. I'm Dan Graham. Thanks for listening.